Left center field, deep, no way. Goal! He's a machine.
Salvador Perez is a machine. He's not human right now. His 45th homer last night, he now is tied for the major league lead in homers. He leads the major leagues in RBIs. His goal before the season was to hit 30 homers. He had never gotten above 27 in a season, and he passed that mark way back in August, and now he's making history. The All-Star joined an exclusive group of power-hitting catchers yesterday afternoon in the Royals' 7-2 loss to the A's. Perez's 45th home run tied Hall of Famer Johnny Bench for the most home runs in a single season in which the player caught at least 75% of the game. So Salvi, just unbelievable. And as you heard Ryan LaFever, it's like, no way, man. He's doing this like every single game. It's pretty amazing stuff. And catching, and got to have sore and achy knees, you would think. It is pretty amazing. Royals do lose. Daniel Lynch exited the game in the third inning with left calf tightness, but early returns on imaging show that he's going to probably be all right and be back on track with his next start. Royals host the Mariners tonight. First of three. Mariners trying to get in the playoffs. The Royals can play spoiler again, and it'll be Brady Singer on the hill at 7-10. Record of 4-10. ERA of 4.75 as the Royals do lose yesterday by a final of 7-5. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. Lots to cover locally, and then we will get into college football. We'll hear from Lance Leipold, Chris Kleiman, Scott Frost, and Lincoln Riley. Also, we will hear from Brian Haney. He was on with us yesterday. We'll also hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Sammy Watkins, a former Chief. We'll hear from him. John Harbaugh, head coach of Baltimore, and Lamar Jackson. So we're going to hear from a lot of different people today as we'll preview college and pro football. And, of course, we're going to preview high school football and get you updated with local sports beginning right now with results from yesterday.
Yeah, cross country yesterday, a lot of activity going on. The Clay Center Invitational, boy, had kind of a limited roster there competing yesterday, but Lance Lundeen did finish third place for the Trojans in the boys varsity race there. So Wamigo won the team title, both girls and the boys. Smith Center Invitational yesterday, the girls team standings. Osborne was first, Smith Center second. Individually on the girls side, Gracie Enix of Smith Center finished in first place with time 21:59.59. Jane Letourneau of St. John's was second. Third place, Serena Armconnect of Smith Center. Maya Schweitzer of Osborne fourth, and Kate Kendig of Osborne was fifth to round out top five finishers. A lot of top 10 finishes from the area as well. You can find full results for all this cross country, by the way, at ncksports.com. Boys team standings there at Smith Center yesterday, Phillipsburg first, Osborne third, St. John's fourth, and Smith Center fifth. Individually on the boys' side, top five finishers. Graham Bales actually first place for Osborne at 18-20-25. Jonas Letourneau finished in third place for St. John's as well. The round out top five finishers from the area. Again, full results at ncksports.com. Now, Kansas Volleyball Association rankings yesterday came out, and we can tell you that Smoky Valley is still number one in Class 3A, as expected. Beloit's number four in 3A still, same spot they were in last week at TMP Marion from the Mid-Continent League, number five. Smith Center hasn't lost, but they moved down to number three in Class 2A as Garden Plain took over the number two spot. Heritage Christian of Olathe is still number one, and also in Class 1A Division 1, Sylvan Lucas moving into the poll at number nine, and St. John's Tipton, a 1A Division 2, moved down to number nine as well. So those are the latest Kansas Volleyball Association rankings. You can find full rankings at ncksports.com. So that's a look at what's going on yesterday and rankings coming out yesterday as well.
All right. Once again, anything that you need, it's right. Pretty much anything you need.
We say it every day, right?
We say it every day, and I am still amazed at how many people, like, listen, the first place you should go for local sports information right away, every single morning, the day after results, or even the day of results, whatever it may be, go to ncksports.com. We've had this website for a decade now. N as in Nancy, North Central. It stands for North Central Kansas Sports.com. NCKSSports.com. That's two S's. All right. You just put NCKS Sports in Google it. It'll come up. It has schedules for all the area teams in the Northern Plains League, North Central Activity Association, Concordia Smith Center. It has results. It has schedules. It has all league archives. It has athletes of the week. It has stories, the latest volleyball rankings, latest football rankings. We got the latest story on six-man football sanctioned and approved by Acacia the other day. There's so much there for you. For if you are part of the Northern Plains League or the North Central Activity Association, or you're a Smith Center Concordia fan, you at least have something there for you as well. It's all posted right there, ncksports.com. That's also where we post our broadcast schedule. We also have the video stream link for Bullet Trojan Sports as well. All of it right there. One nice, tidy site. NCKSSports.com. If you know about it, spread it to your friends and let them know about it if they don't know about it. Because, I mean, it's an amazing, amazing place to go to get information for local sports. And we're very fortunate to have it here in North Central Kansas. And many areas of the state don't have anything like that. Mm-hmm. And they would be dying to have that in their area. So I hope people start. I mean, there's a lot of people that know it's there. It's just there's some people that just need to. I mean, it's just amazing every single
day.
Where do
I find
this?
It's like, where it's NCKSSports.com.
I've got a person that lives near me that every year I have to like. I could go back and look at my previous text. I'm like, you know, they always ask like, what do you, you know, all you gotta do is hit NCKSSports.com. All the time you took to text me, trying to have me send you the information. All you gotta do is go to the website and it's click on the link for what you want. It's right there. And that person's asking me, and it's like, when is it going to sink in that is the website? Yeah. If you can grab your phone and text me, and I've told that person 1,000 times, it's like they're too lazy to type in the website address, but they're not too lazy to text me a paragraph about wanting results.
Yeah.
It's like, hello, hello. So it is interesting, no doubt about it. Everybody, it takes all kinds of folks. So just trying to stress to everybody out there, those of you that know it's there and you know it, I think you enjoy it, and spread the word for people that don't. If you've got new parents that got kids in sports for the first time, especially in high school, then that's the people that might not be aware of it, maybe, because they don't have any kids in high school, so they never had the need for it. Check it out, NCKSports.com. You missed the rankings. Dusty just went over. It's right there. All right, so high school football. Ready for that?
I'm ready.
All right, high school football week 3 is tonight. We got a couple of rivalry games. We'll start with the game on Katy Country 94 and KatyCountry94.com. Live video stream at NCKSports.com via Beloit Trojan Channel is Beloit at Concordia. Beloit 1-1 on the season, and Concordia is 2-0. Concordia beat Wamego in 4 overtimes to start the year, then blew out Abilene last week. Beloit, meanwhile, won their first game against Marysville and then lost by 30 to Southeast Lane. 36-6. Game was 8-6 at halftime. Things snowballed on Beloit in that second half against Southeast, who is a very good football team. Last year, well, the last 2 years have been interesting. 2 years ago, Beloit went to Concordia, and Beloit was a favorite, and Concordia won by 10 and scored 34 unanswered. Last year, Concordia was the heavy favorite, and Beloit was 0-2 and couldn't do anything offensively for through the first 2 weeks and changed their offense drastically. Concordia wasn't prepared for it, and Beloit routed Concordia 36-7. Concordia was 2-0. Beloit was 0-2 going into that game. It was pretty amazing. I didn't see it coming. I don't think anybody did. In fact, I talked to a couple people before the game that seemed to know a lot about high school football, and they're sitting here telling me that Concordia was going to win that game 40-0, and it was 36-7. So that person was way off. Mm-hmm. That's why you play the games. You don't have to listen to all the talking heads about all this stuff. That's why they play the games. Jordan Etcher, a third-year head coach at Concordia, he's 1-1 against Beloit as a head coach in the rivalry games tonight in Concordia. 2-0 Concordia, 1-1 Beloit. And he feels that his team might be a little bit motivated, or hopes so, from last year's loss at Beloit.
No, I don't know if it was a combination of the records. You know, when you talk about, you know, these young men, these high school kids, and then the fact that they were able to score 34 and answer the year before and win. So if the guys went in, you know, a little, you know, I don't know if you call it big-headed or a little overconfident or what you call it, but, you know, kind of got smacked in the mouth there early. But I think part of that is, you know, kind of the rivalry game and how fired up, you know, the kids get to play, the kids are to play. So, you know, the goal tonight would be that, you know, we come out ready to roll, and, you know, I think last year will help, you know, make us ready for this year.
Concordia, they've got their whole offensive line back. In fact, one of their starters from last year coming back was beat out by a sophomore, which means their line's even better probably than last year. They're a physical team, and they've played a close game already. They've got Kian Miller's, a very good, talented player, who last week had 2 touchdown runs, a touchdown reception, and an interception return for a touchdown, all in the first half. That's a season for some guys. So he's good. They do have a new quarterback in Cav Carlgan. Wyatt Trost graduated. He was an outstanding player. Brad Gober, aware that Concordia is a solid squad.
They've got some good players, and they start 8 seniors on offense, and, you know, they got some big guys up front. You know, they've got Dalton Owen kid who's a good football player who has obviously he's improved every single year, and they got the Keen Miller kid, a really good running back. And their quarterback, Cav Carlgan, does a good job for him too. And, you know, Coach Etcher has done a good job finding a scheme that kind of fits his personnel, and, you know, they're executing it pretty well so far. And so, you know, it's going to be a tough task. They're a good team. You know, they're one of the better teams on the east side of 3A, and, you know, if we don't play well, we'll have our hands full. We love being in these kinds of games and rivalry games, and especially in games where you have to raise your level of play. And so, you know, it's going to be a fun night.
It should be interesting. Beloit might be a little bit shorthanded tonight. Don't know that for sure. I'll double-check that later today, and we'll find out come game time if they're short a player, if that player might be available. So it'll be interesting whether Beloit wins or loses tonight. If they lose, no need to freak out, because when Beloit's schedule gets easier, they'll play 2A schools and they'll play district games. And Beloit will be favored in every district game from here on out. And I think the wild card is how good Hoisington will get by the time Beloit plays them in Beloit in week 8. You know, Beloit will be favored against Ellsworth, Minneapolis, Norton, Phillipsburg. So Beloit, even if they would lose tonight and they're 1-2, it's not the end of the world. Having said that, they don't want to lose to Concordia. That's a rivalry game, and Concordia doesn't want to lose to Beloit. So this can be a very interesting matchup tonight. I could see this one being a little bit low scoring as well. Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com, live video stream at ncksports.com, via Beloit Trojan channel. Dusty's got the Osborne County rivalry tonight. Should be a great ball game. Lakeside hosting Osborne. Osborne with the big win over St. John's Tipton last week. Lakeside has blown out the first two opponents they faced. Lakeside can beat you with the run. They can beat you with the pass. And Osborne, big win for them last week. They bounced back after a tough week one loss to Hill City. Steve Tiernan, head coach of the Osborne Bulldogs, on Lakeside's athleticism.
They've got every ingredient you need to be a successful football team, from the line to the athleticism. And so we're just going to have to come up with a way to be as athletic with them and fly to the football and make good tackles. Because, I mean, these guys, if you don't wrap them up, one guy very seldom is probably going to tackle quarterback or running back.
And that Osborne offense, they always have speed and executed pretty well last week. And that got the attention of Lakeside head coach Drew Dusky.
Offensively, their little read option they run, I mean, they do it well. And sometimes, even watching game film, as coaches, it's hard to tell where the ball is going to go. So hopefully our defense is, you know, sound, and we're keeping our assignments and, you know, flowing to the ball and wrapping up. Their speed is definitely a concern.
So, you know, we talk about Beloit-Concordia rivalry game. It's not a big deal if somebody loses. I mean, it is, because you don't want to lose to your rival, but it's not a district game. It's not a league game. It has no impact on playoffs. This rivalry game absolutely does.
This is a huge game tonight. I mean, both of these teams opened out. So we talked at the beginning of the season how tough 8-man Division II District 4 was going to be, because we knew last year that, you know, teams beat up on each other, and 1 week changed everything if you lost in those standings. So this year, both of these teams get off to the win. They're 1-0 coming into district play, into this game tonight, and this is huge. I mean, it's a 2-0 leg up on the rest of the competition, right? And so if you go out there and get this win tonight, it could end up being your season in the end, right? If you can win this one and somehow get hot and maybe win the rest of them too, this is very, very important tonight. And again, as you mentioned, the rivalry part brings a different dynamic to it as well. You know, Lakeside went to Osborne last year and beat them at their place. I know that Osborne is looking to return that favor, because Coach Tiernan has let his kids know about that all week and said, hey, let's go back and do it here at Downs too. And you know that Coach Dusky's got his group ready, saying, hey, they're going to be ready for us. They're going to want to come here and beat us. So we got to be, you know, in tip-top shape here and ready to go. And I, you know, as far as handicapping the game, it's tough to figure out how it's going to come out. Both teams are very athletic, obviously. They have speed, both teams, really. And both teams have shown the ability to be physical here early this season. So it's a 50-50 game, really, for me. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how it comes out. It should be a very exciting one there in Downs tonight.
The winner of this game would obviously have a leg up, as you said. And if Thunder Ridge would beat St. John's Tipton tonight, we'll get to that in a little bit, then really you start to see the pecking order of the district. Mm-hmm. There's basically the top three, which would be Osborne, Lakeside, and Thunder Ridge, which is many people thought were the top three before the season. And then the other three in that district would be Pike Valley, St. John's Tipton, and Rock Hills fighting out for the last playoff spot. That would be if St. John's Tipton loses tonight to Thunder Ridge. Now, St. John's Tipton beats Thunder Ridge tonight. Now, suddenly, the team that has the biggest leg up is going to be the team that wins this game between Osborne and Lakeside, and there could be a battle for second, perhaps, although there's a long way to go. So it's going to be a really fun game. I know I'll be looking forward to the updates throughout your ball game, so I can pass along to people that want to be listening or watching a Beloit Concordia game but want to know what's going on with Osborne and Lakeside. That should be a good one. Osborne at Lakeside tonight on Z96.3 Lake and online, katycountry94.com. Other games around the area tonight, I mentioned the St. John's Tipton Thunder Ridge game. That's really interesting, because the Blue Jays, they need to bounce back. Great win in week one, then a really just things snowballed on in week two. Mm-hmm. And they really got to pick themselves off the mat and be ready to go tonight. And Thunder Ridge has a chance to make a statement.
Yeah, and Thunder Ridge will be a team that will bring physicality to the game. And, mm-hmm. and St. John's Tipton maybe hasn't seen as much of that this year, although Sylvan's a pretty physical team usually. So that should be an interesting one there in 8-man Division II District 4, like you said. Looking forward to that one in Kensington to see how that turns out. Pike Valley at Southern Cloud is the other game within the district tonight. Here tonight in Division II, District 4. Rock Hills tonight is their non-district game hosting Axtell in Mankato here this evening. Tough game for the Grizzlies here this evening as well. 8-man Division II, District 5. Sylvan Lucas at Chase tonight. A non-district game, Lincoln at Logan Palka should be an interesting one as well. And then 1A District 3, Smith Center opens district play against Ellenwood. So those are your immediate area teams that are playing tonight. We'll have a full look at the schedule in all of our leagues in the area tonight on the Football Express, presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable, starting at 5:40. So stay tuned for that. We'll preview all the area league matchups and hear from the coaches. And then we'll conclude our game night coverage, the local high school football scoreboard show tonight, presented by State Farm Insurance, Beloit, and Osborne. Looking forward to seeing how everything comes out in week three, and hopefully talk with some winning coaches here this evening as well.
Pre-game at 6:30, kickoff at 7 for those games on the radio and video stream tonight. All right. Once again, that whole schedule is posted, ncksports.com. High school weekend schedule. We got a lot of volleyball coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, both Beloit and Smith Center, as well as Pike Valley, will be competing at the Republic County Invitational. So that's going on there. Lincoln, Sylvan, Lucas, both at the Tescott Tournament here this weekend in high school volleyball as well. So that should cover all of our area teams competing this weekend in volleyball. And Beloit girls tennis is at Clay Center. I think Concordia is there as well. So that's what's going on locally in high school sports this weekend.
All right, time to take a look at college football for this weekend. At Baylor at KU. KU's Big 12 opener. KU is a 17-point underdog, 2:30 kickoff. Pre-game 2 o'clock tomorrow on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas. Baylor off to a 2-0 start. Really haven't beaten anybody yet. Lance Leipold, first-year head coach with KU. Jayhawks are 1-1 after that loss at Coastal Carolina last Friday night. And Coach Leipold knows it'll be a challenge going up against the Bears.
I see a team getting better. You can see they're more comfortable in year two and what they're doing. It's going to be two athletic quarterbacks that can have the ability to run and throw. They have explosive playmakers like everybody in our league. The running back's also a great kick returner and has done some things. So I think their offensive line has drastically improved from a year ago where they won. You can see them more comfortable. Big defensive line and athletic secondary, that it's going to be a good challenge.
Defensive coordinator Brian Borland, in an article on KUSports.com, saying he's looking for an improved physicality from his team on defense. He's looking for that going this game against Baylor, which they'll probably need in order to have a chance to win the ball game. KU is a 17-point dog. That's pretty significant. They are at home. At the same time, you can understand where that comes from. KU barely beat South Dakota, and they did lose by 27 to Coastal Carolina, although Coastal Carolina, that was a road game. They're ranked top 25, and KU was in the game in the third quarter. But KU, 2:30 tomorrow on Z96.3, hosting Baylor. K-State in action at home at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. K-State is 2-0. Nevada is 2-0. And K-State is a 1.5-point underdog at home, mainly because Skylar Thompson will not be available to play. He'll be out for a few weeks, maybe a while, but they hope to have him back later this year, which means the pressure is going to be squarely on the shoulders of Will Howard, although, honestly, K-State's not going to go out there and wing it 40 times. Will Howard, if K-State's going to win this game coming up tomorrow against Nevada, I would say Will Howard's got to throw the ball less than 20 times. If he throws over 20, I think K-State's doomed. That's just my opinion. I think Dusty agrees with me on that, too.
I would say so, yeah.
The less he throws it, the better off they are.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's not – I mean,
the running game's working, right?
Right, exactly. We're not trying to say Will Howard's a horrible quarterback. We're just saying that'd take the pressure off of him so he could have some play-action passes here and there, and they'd always be in – second, third manageable distances instead of second, third, and long when you have to throw, and that's where he's had some problems so far. But they're going to go up. So Nevada is going to face a backup quarterback in this game coming up tomorrow at 105 on ESPN+. K-State's going to face maybe the best quarterback in college football in regards to his draft prospect status. Mock drafts have him as the best quarterback right now in college. Some do. And he comes to Bill Snyder Family Stadium tomorrow. Chris Kleiman on Carson Strong and his ability to play quarterback.
I think he calls a lot of the things himself at the line of scrimmage out of their tempo. Although they can go fast, they'll slow it down some so that he can get them in the right call or the call that he likes. And tremendous arm strength, mobile guy that just, you know, he sees so many coverages and he's seen so much and played so many snaps. It's not easy to fool a kid like that, guys that have had that many snaps. And we just got to do a great job of being able to rush the passer and be competitive on a lot of potential 50-50 throws.
Carson Strong has completed 68% of his passes, thrown for almost 700 yards in just two games and six touchdowns through the air. They knocked off Cal from the Pac-12 in first week, so a decent opponent. Idaho State they beat in week two. They're a very talented offensive team, no question about it. And here's Kleiman on Nevada.
We're going to face a really good Nevada team, a tremendous offensive team with a really good quarterback, really good couple running backs, some wide receivers, good offensive line. They want to throw it all over the yard, but they can run it and run it effectively. And then on defense, I'm familiar with their defensive coordinator, Brian Ward's a friend of mine, and Brian worked with Scotty Hazleton for a few years, worked with Steve Standard, kind of came from the same tree that I came from a defensive standpoint. Doesn't mean we're going to know what they're going to do by any means, because he's got really good players and a really good scheme, but there is some familiarity. But B. Ward's done a terrific job, and so has Jay Norvell. I've known Jay for an awful long time, and he's done a great job at Nevada, and they're playing at a high level with a lot of seniors.
All right, so I think we both agree that Baylor, we would pick to beat KU, although I think we both are leaning towards KU covering the spread. K-State, they are 1.5-point underdog. We both had Nevada winning this game before the season began when we went week by week through both teams' schedules. That was with a healthy Skylar Thompson. And now without a healthy Skylar Thompson, I'm going to stick with – I don't know why I would change my mind. I mean, for me personally, it's like why – I mean, if I'd had Nevada winning before the season, Nevada's 2-0 and beat Cal and beat Idaho State, and they got one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and K-State hasn't seen any kind of great quarterback yet, even though their defense has been good so far. Stanford's quarterback play was really abysmal, to be quite honest with you. Part of that was K-State's doing. Part of it was just this quarterback wasn't as good as Carson Strong. It's a great test for the K-State defense, but now Will Howard's behind center, and I mean, you know, Will Howard's a good kid, and I think he's going to figure some things out, no doubt about it. I expect him to play better against Nevada than he did the other day against Southern Illinois, but I don't think it'll be enough. I'm going to pick Nevada to win.
I'm going to jump out on the limb.
He's changing.
I like what I've seen.
He thinks that K-State's better without Skylar Thompson at quarterback. That is what Dusty's
Will
really
Howard's
telling you.
My guy.
I guess so, yeah.
I feel like Will will be better this week with more reps as a starter. I mean, he started seven games last year.
Sure.
You know, he's had time in the system, mm-hmm. and he got thrust into a situation he wasn't ready for last mm-hmm. week and actually played better as the game went on in the right. second half. Didn't move the ball like they might have wanted to mm-hmm. until that fourth quarter drive where they scored, but I think he'll be much better this weekend. I really like what I've seen from the K-State defense this year. And I know they haven't seen anybody like Strong yet, but I'm going to go ahead and go out on that limb, because I did pick Nevada to start the season as well. But from what I've seen from some of the guys, I'm liking what I see right now from K-State if they can put it all together tomorrow. So I'll take the Cats by, you know, not a full touchdown. That's 6 points is what I said, I think, but whatever. If they win, I don't care what the spread is.
There you have it. The number one fan of the Will Howard fan club is Dusty Diner. There you have it. Now, I will say this. If Will Howard does not play well tomorrow, and the K-State defense, you know, has problems and give up a lot of points, I can hear the narrative coming up on Saturday night. Will Howard can't play quarterback. We need, well, already we're yelling for Rubley, and he's not even third on the depth chart. Well, we need this other guy that we know nothing about. We want him the right play quarterback. We need Skylar back so badly. And our defense, I knew it was a fluke. We weren't that good. Now, if K-State goes out there and wins and the defense plays well, you're going to be like, okay, the K-State defense might be completely legit. And Will Howard plays better, as you say. And honestly, the key to him, I think, is mistake-free. Like, he might go out there and go 7 of 15 for 120 yards. As long as there's no picks or fumbles,
that
could be good enough tomorrow. And then people may say, okay, we can get by with Will Howard for a while until Skylar comes back. I think those are the two possible narratives you're going to hear after tomorrow, because I don't see Will Howard going out there and lighting the world on fire.
No, I don't see that. I see Deuce Vaughn maybe going out there and lighting the world on fire like he has been, right? So that's what you need. You need Will Howard to be a game manager. We talk about it all the time, right?
Right.
It's just you manage the game. Don't turn the ball over. Make sure you're making smart decisions, smart reads, things like that. And let your guys take over for you. You know, let the line do their job, which has been fairly good this year so mm-hmm. far, offensive line, and let Deuce do his thing and all those guys. Just let them take care of it for you. Don't try to do too much.
Let the Deuce loose, but it'll be a little bit harder with Howard at quarterback
yeah.
because you don't have to respect the pass as much, although K-State's got some decent receivers when they stay healthy, like Malik Knowles is one of those. So it'll be an interesting game tomorrow, Nevada at K-State. I would love to go to that game, and I could have gone to that game, but I have flag football. So, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. I'll save myself some money. Okay, Big 12 schedule. The big game, of course, if it's a big game. I always laugh when all these people say, oh, it's not that big a game, but yet then everybody talks about it. Nebraska at Oklahoma, and, you know, that was the game of the century back in, I forgot what year it was, 71. Nebraska's 2-1, lost the season opener to Illinois. Have you noticed Illinois lost their last two? Nebraska beat Buffalo last week, 28-3. Nebraska's at number 4 Oklahoma. That's in Norman tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. on Fox. Oklahoma blew out Western Carolina. They barely held on to beat Tulane in week one. Nebraska's a 22.5-point underdog. Scott Frost, on going into Norman and trying to pull off the upset, what are the keys?
We got to be physical. You know, these guys are one of the best in the country on offense, one of the best in the country at creating big plays. You got to try to limit big plays. And their quarterback, I mean, he's a gunslinger. He's fun to watch, and he's got a lot of good guys to throw to. I think we got to give our quarterback time. We got to mix it up real well, and they got a great team. So, you know, we're fighting a little bit of an uphill battle with what they put on the field, but our kids are excited to go down and test themselves against this team.
You know, the strength of Nebraska so far this year, even in the loss to Illinois, is their defense. I mean, their defense played very well, except for maybe the first drive of the third quarter, the start of the second half against Illinois in week one. Lincoln Riley, head coach of the Sooners, has taken note of that.
They do everything pretty well. I mean, they're pretty experienced in the secondary. Guys have played a lot of ball. They got a big physical front. They do some things schematically that really challenge you. Do a good job mixing it up. I mean, they're a good group. You know, they are. I think they've really improved from looking at some of last year's tape and on to this year. I think it's a much better unit, and they're playing at a high level. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So it's a challenge.
You know, this game, I don't think Nebraska wins. I think there is a scenario where they could, but I think that requires Adrian Martinez to be the Heisman Trophy candidate he was a few years ago. And I think Adrian Martinez is just inconsistent enough to where he'll make a big mistake, even if this is a tight game. And in fairness, Adrian Martinez, he hasn't had much help in the run game outside of him carrying the ball. And so I think Nebraska will be a little too one-dimensional in regards to that's the only guy that's going to hurt Oklahoma. Now, it could be wrong. Maybe Nebraska will have a breakout day running the ball. And if they do, then Oklahoma might be in trouble. But Nebraska tends to make mistakes in games like this. They just do. And until they change it, Dusty always says this, I'll believe it when I see it. And I haven't seen that during Scott Frost's tenure at Nebraska. Now, if Nebraska goes in and can beat Oklahoma tomorrow, that changes the whole narrative with Nebraska fans. Frost has his biggest win by far since he's been the head coach, and Nebraska's pointing in the right direction. Then they'll probably lose to whoever they play the next week. That's just how it'll probably work. That's if Nebraska wins. I don't think they will. I do think the spread's 22.5. That's a pretty big number. I can definitely see it snowballing where Oklahoma just blows them out of the water. If the bad Adrian Martinez shows up and he doesn't protect the football and he has pressure and then he, you know, panics a little bit, I can see Oklahoma rolling him. But I think Nebraska is going to be jacked for this game. You should be. It's a golden opportunity. You got nothing to lose here. Nobody's picking Nebraska to win this game, so you got nothing to lose. The pressure's on Oklahoma. Oklahoma's whined about playing at 11 a.m. for quite some time when this game came out. That's fine. Let them whine. If you're Nebraska, you just say, yeah, let them whine. That's fine. And we'll go in there and beat them anyway. And Nebraska, if you can play defense and run the ball, you've got a chance against anybody. They play defense so far. Now, running the ball, it's pretty much Martinez. So that, to me, is the whole key for Nebraska to have a chance. Can they run the ball effectively without always having to have it in the hands of Adrian Martinez? Can somebody else in that backfield have a breakout game? So far, nobody's done it, and Oklahoma's probably the best competition they've faced this year so far. It absolutely is, even on defense, where Oklahoma's not known as a great defensive team. It's still probably the best defense Nebraska's going to face early on, better than Buffalo, better than Fordham, obviously, and probably better than Illinois, too. So that's going to be the key. Can they run the football with somebody besides Adrian Martinez? If they can, I think they got a puncher's chance to make this game interesting and maybe be there at the end. But if they don't do that, I don't see there's any way that they win. I'm going to say Oklahoma wins, but I'm going to say Nebraska backdoor cover loses by like 21.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel. I so badly actually want to pick Nebraska to pull off an upset here. It's like
and won some game where they had played great and pulled off a big upset, I think you might have the guts to do it, but you haven't seen it yet.
No, and no matter who their coach is, even Pelini, right? Like, they didn't win those games that they shouldn't win, right?
Right. They and beat so the teams like, they should, and they beat the others.
And it's like they didn't win those kind of games, and this is another one of those kind of games. But I'm just, you know, all the chatter that you hear from both sides, this is like, it'd be funny if Nebraska would go down there and win, but I don't see that even coming close to happening. So I'm kind of with you. I think maybe Oklahoma might settle kind of like they did in week one, you know, kind of feel comfortable with where they're at.
And right.
Nebraska might get a touchdown or two at the end to make it 14-21 to cover the 22.5 or whatever you said it was. But they're not going to be in the game, I don't feel like.
Listen, if Oklahoma jumps out 14-0, it's going to get ugly.
Yeah.
It's going to get ugly in a hurry. But if Nebraska could, you know, somehow score first, up 7-0, 3-0, I mean, then maybe there's a puncher's chance. But I think Nebraska has to play an A game to have any chance of winning this game. I think Oklahoma can play B- and still win.
Yeah.
Because Oklahoma's that much better. But that doesn't mean that the guarantee is a win. It doesn't. The rest of the Big 12 schedule, of course, Nebraska at Oklahoma, 11 a.m. tomorrow. Virginia Tech, number 15 at West Virginia, FS1, 11 a.m. tomorrow. Nevada, K-State, 105 on ESPN+. Yes, you're going to have to pay the $6.99, everyone, if you want to watch it or go to the game. Baylor at Kansas, that's 2:30, pregame 2 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake, as we said. Florida International at Texas Tech at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Rice at Texas, unranked Texas, as it should be, 7 o'clock tomorrow. Wouldn't that be hilarious if Rice won that game?
Big Al fan tomorrow.
I'm a Big Al fan, too. Big Al hits dingers and Big Owls. I'm a fan of them, too. Number 22, Oklahoma State in one poll at Boise State at 8 o'clock. And Iowa State ranked 14th after loss to Iowa is at UNLV on CBS Sports Network tomorrow at 9:30. Other top 25 action tomorrow. Number 8, Cincinnati is at Indiana. Ohio State, number 9, hosting Tulsa. Miami of Florida, number 24, hosting Michigan State. I'm just going to call it. I'm picking Michigan State to win that one. Coastal Carolina is 16 at Buffalo. New Mexico is at number 7, Texas A&M. A&M completely overrated, in my opinion. Michigan, number 25, hosting Northern Illinois. Notre Dame is number 12, hosting Purdue. Number 1, Alabama, at number 11, Florida. Alabama is a 14.5-point favorite. I'd say Alabama covers, and Alabama wins, pulling away in the second half. And Florida's a top 11 team, supposedly. You think Florida's got a chance in that one?
No.
I like it.
I just don't.
That's short and precise. Georgia Tech's at number 6, Clemson. Kent State's at number 5, Iowa. Georgia Southern at number 20, Arkansas. South Carolina's at number 2, Georgia. A good game. Number 22, Auburn's at number 10, Penn State. Virginia's at number 21, North Carolina. Wouldn't it be something if Oregon loses to Stony Brook this week after beating Ohio State? Oregon's a 42-point favorite. They host Stony Brook.
I'm surprised that's even on the board.
I am, too. Oregon's a number 4 ranked team. Arizona State, number 19, at number 23, BYU. BYU, a new member of the Big 12. They're ranked 23rd. Iowa State, I mentioned earlier. And UCLA, ranked 13th, back in action after a week off, after their big win over LSU a couple weeks ago. They host Fresno State. That's a look at the top 25. MIAA, Washburn's at Nebraska Kearney tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Northwest Missouri State at Central Missouri at 1. Emporia State at Missouri Western at 6. Pittsburgh State, go Gorillas, at Northeastern State at 6 o'clock. And Lincoln is at Fort Hays State at 7 o'clock tomorrow night in the MIAA. All right, time to turn our attention to, well, before I get to the Chiefs, I want to go off a bit of the beaten path, because Brian Heaney, the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, he was on with us yesterday, and Brian is on with us every single Thursday on the Sports Ticket, brought to each and every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit. And it wasn't a question I had planned on asking Brian Heaney, but I am so glad that I did. I'm one of those people, when I interview somebody, I have a few questions in mind. I have them typed up, written out, but I don't always stick to this. I don't stick to it because I go where the interviewer, the person I'm interviewing takes me. I think the worst interviews are people that are just like, they don't listen to the response to the question you ask, and you just go to another question, and people are listening going, why didn't he follow up on that one? Mm-hmm. There's more to that. And so yesterday, before I got to the off-the-wall question of Brian Heaney, after we talked about KU-Baylor, I was curious because I've seen tons of talk around K-State about how there's excitement because BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, Central Florida were added to the Big 12 officially on Friday. So I asked Brian Heaney yesterday, the voice of the Jayhawks, okay, what's the view, what's the perspective, what's the reaction in Lawrence in regards to adding 4 schools to the Big 12? His answer, very interesting. Listen very carefully.
You know, surprisingly, not a lot of talk.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's because even though that's happened and we're excited that's happened and we're committed to the Big 12, you know, there's still one eye open on other changes in college athletics and where's going to be the most stable long-term home with the most lucrative future. Not so athletic administrators can line their pockets, but so we can continue to compete in the arms race of facilities and recruiting and all that. And that's something that remains to be seen, because even though the quantity may have gone up and we fortified ourselves with four really good athletic departments joining the mix. The overall quality in terms of national brand recognition when you lose a Texas and an Oklahoma, isn't what it was. And that's just being honest. And I think Bob Bowlsby did an amazing job to get the four teams he did. You weren't going to go out and replace Texas and Oklahoma. You just can't go out and replace one for one when you lose a blue chip like that. So I think that they did the best they could, and it's encouraging. In the short term, I think we still understand that Travis Goff is going to do what's best for Kansas, because you have to think, when the next TV contract rolls around, are these 12 teams going to fetch as much money and generate as many eyeballs to fetch that money as a 10-team league that had Oklahoma and Texas? My point is, it's not a permanent solution. It's definitely a step in the right direction, and it's certainly something that I'm excited about, because my first choice would be to stay in this league, because I'm going to miss these other 9 schools that we've had a chance to get to know over the last 25 years, and in the cases of Kansas State and Oklahoma State and schools like that, clubs I grew up watching throughout my childhood, the Big 8 basketball tournament in Kansas City and all that. If some of these Big 10 rumors and speculation wound up happening with Kansas and Iowa State going off together, that's great, but there isn't like the same venom, obviously, toward Iowa State in any regard, and that would be the only previous Big 8 team you'd be keeping anything alive with. Yeah. And your top two rivals of Mizzou and K-State, sure, you can reschedule them for the non-con, but it doesn't have the same passion or intensity in that regard. So let me be clear. I'm a huge proponent of keeping it together. I just hope now their next big challenge, and the toughest of them all, is making it work financially and getting the type of contract in return, TV dollars that is, that keeps us somewhere similar to where we've been. That's going to be a mountain of a challenge without Oklahoma and Texas.
What stood out to you when you listened to that?
Well, I mean, obviously the thing that stands out is like he's still hoping, and they're still probably hoping for some, maybe get into the Big Ten, and they want more money. They're not going to be content to sit around with the money that they're going to lose because Texas and Oklahoma are out. It's kind of interesting to present it that way. I've never really thought about that, because I don't think K-State has that kind of option, right? And that's, you were talking about Manhattan at the start of that, where everybody is like really excited because these four teams are coming in. But I never really had approached it that way for KU, because I figured that whole thing was out of the window. That's what stood out the most to me. I feel like he might know something. Obviously, he knows some things
we
don't.
He knows a lot more
But it was interesting to present it that way, and seems like there's a feeling that they can still get into the Big Ten.
What stood out to me, and I'll see if I'll pull it up here. I think I have it queued up. Let me play this, see if I can find it. Listen carefully here.
That I'm excited about, because my first choice would be to stay in this league, because I'm going to miss these other.
Going to miss that is interesting. I'm going to miss. It wasn't, well, I would miss. It's, I'm going to miss. Travis Goff came out, the athletic director at KU, and Gene Taylor was asked about this. Travis Goff said, "Hey, it was a good day. We added four schools, but he said we're going to do what's best for Kansas. We're going to keep our eyes open, our ears peeled," which he should, and Gene Taylor should say the same thing. Honestly, every single one of them should, and I think behind closed doors they are. Mm-hmm. Publicly, KU is basically saying, we think, this is how I take it, and K-State fans, I'm sure, will agree with me on this. KU comes across, when they're the one of the eight, and they're the only one of the remaining eight, that has publicly come out and said that after adding four schools, that, hey, we're still looking at options, and the other seven are kind of like, well, I thought we were solid and united together here, because that's what allowed us to add the four. And KU is making it come across, and trust me, I know this from talking to K-State fans many times over the years, a few in particular, that they feel that KU has this uppity attitude sometimes, that they're better than everybody else. And in basketball, they usually are. And that's how it comes across right now to the other seven schools, I'm sure, is KU's going, you know what? We don't have to stay in this conference with BYU, Cincinnati, Central Florida, and Houston. We don't have to. We may have other options. We believe the Big Ten's still an option. Brian Haney said something about Iowa State possibly going with them. I don't know that. I don't know at all. But KU, I think, is still holding out hope that they'll go to the Big Ten. And here's a scenario I'll present forward, is if KU and Lance Leipold turns things around in a couple of years, that would make KU more attractive to join the Big Ten. What's holding KU back, I think, in some cases, is how bad the program is. But if KU, obviously, was a top two team in the country in 2008 and won an Orange Bowl, it can be done, all right? The landscape is a little bit different now. But if Lance Leipold can turn things around the next couple of years to get him more respectable, I think KU becomes a more attractive tenant, as you can say, to add to your rental house of properties in the Big Ten. And, of course, KU basketball is nice to have no matter what, but that I don't think is the driving force. If it was, I think it already would happen. So when he says, I'm going to miss, it almost sounds like, maybe he just misspoke, but it almost sounds like he knows something that we don't, and it's almost like, we're going somewhere. We're going to, and many people say the Big Ten, it's just a matter of time. That's how I take it. This is nice, but nobody's that excited. I mean, yay, four schools replace Oklahoma, Texas. It still doesn't get us to where we need to be financially. And he's right. I mean, I will say this. You know, the other schools got to be sitting going, well, KU's acting like they're more important than us, and they're saying this publicly. You know why they can say this publicly? Because they know that the Big 12, and this sounds really sad, but this is what happened with Oklahoma and Texas. KU now knows that they have the one marquee brand that's left in the Big 12. Just like Texas, Oklahoma knew they had the brands, now KU's got the best remaining brand, and that's basketball. So KU now is playing the role of Texas, Oklahoma, going, we know we have the most attractive thing here. So we don't have to stand in line with you completely. We will be with you for now, but we're going to consider our options, and the Big 12 is not going to kick you out because they know that that would be a mistake with the brand name that KU has, especially at basketball. Kind of like before, why did the Big 12 not kick out Texas or Oklahoma? Well, because they're brand names. Now, KU basketball is definitely on the par with Texas football in regards to brand, but in regards to the landscape of how important football and basketball is, that's up to each person. Many people believe this is mostly football, although there is a lot of money that could be made in basketball as well if they really worked it right. So if I look at it from KU's perspective as you can put it out there, why not? Because the Big 12 ain't going to vote you out, and they needed your vote to get the four schools in anyway. They needed all eight to be unanimous, which they were. But at the end of the day, it comes back, and everybody knows listening to this show for a long time now, it always comes back to the almighty dollar. We talked about it. BYU, Cincinnati, well, BYU is going to make more money, but Cincinnati and Central Florida and Houston are going to make three times as much money just coming into the current TV deal. They'll go from like $7-8 million a year to like 2021. The deal that you had when Oklahoma and Texas was in the Big 12, each team or each school was getting roughly $37 million a year. Brian Haney made it very clear. And honestly, K-State's got to be saying the same thing. The only thing is K-State might not have the options that KU has or KU perceives to have.
Yeah.
If you're K-State, you're like, we don't want to go from 37 to 25 or 20 million, but that's the best thing that's on the table. That's better than just completely falling apart and then we go to the Mountain West Conference, okay? So this is the best thing. We're kind of more excited about it. And KU is going, listen, we've got a big-time basketball program here. We really spent some money on it. We want to improve our football program. We're getting $37 million a year. So you've replaced Oklahoma, Texas with BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and Central Florida, and that doesn't even come close to what Oklahoma, Texas brings to the table financially, and that would be correct. And so why would we want to take $17 million less per year and just act like everything's great when we still think there's a chance we could join the Big Ten and make $60 million a year, which would be $40 million than what you'll make with your new Big 12? Hello, I know 60 is bigger than 20. I can do simple math here. Why do you think Texas Oklahoma went to the SEC? Because 60 or 65 sounded better than $37 million a year. So I get what Brian Haney's saying. I get what KU's saying. And KU's not even sugarcoating it. It's basically, listen, this is just a step in the right direction. You got a long way to go, Big 12, to replace Oklahoma and Texas to get us to where we need. And it basically sounds like KU's going, listen, we don't want to take no pay cut. We know there might be a short-term pay cut, but long-term, there better not be a long-term pay cut or we're out of here. The question is, will anybody actually welcome them into their conference so that KU can get that big paycheck that they once did or get even a bigger paycheck? That's the wild card of the whole thing. There are a lot of things going on that are under the radar that we don't know about. And when you talk to somebody that is with the University of Kansas, and in this case, the play-by-play voice of Kansas, and he's, and Brian's very careful in what he says, and some of the things he said yesterday and what Travis Goff said recently makes you and leads you to believe that KU within the next couple of years could easily desert the Big 12 as long as they've got the opportunity. Well, they would in a heartbeat. And let's be honest. You can pick on KU from this standpoint, but let's be honest, K-State fans. If the Big 10 came a calling to you after you put together this 12-team conference, you add those four schools, Texas, Oklahoma are out, and in 2 years, the Big 10 comes to K-State and says, hey, we like you and Kansas. Do you think K-State's going to say no?
If they do, there's something severely wrong with who's running their program.
Exactly.
In their department.
So when K-State fans can hate on KU by going, well, they kind of seem uppity here because they think they're more important than everybody else, kind of like Texas was, and they think that, well, you know, we can just break away here, and I thought we were unified, and they're going to break up our unification, our solidarity. And that's, you know, I understand that viewpoint. Totally do get it. But at the same time, if the roles were reversed, K-State would do the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Just like sure. If K-State was Oklahoma, Texas, they would have done the same thing in both of the SEC. Yeah. We all know this. Not one single person from any institution has said, we're going to turn down $30 million per year. Who in their right mind would?
Nobody.
Anybody in this world. Hardly anybody would ever do that.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I mean, KU's throwing out the smoke, but is there actually a fire anywhere?
That's the question.
You know, that's the question. Is there fire anywhere? They're throwing out smoke for sure. Okay, they're saying these things, but is there an actual, okay, yeah, we want you.
Right. I think there's...
I think there's basketball's some flirting. The only thing they're holding on to, obviously.
Right. But here's the wild card, I'm telling you, because you don't have to do it right now. But 2 years from now,
yeah.
I believe Oklahoma, Texas are going to leave in 2 years. That's my belief.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think it'll be next year. I don't think it's going to be the end of the TV deal. That's my belief. I could be wrong. If they leave in 2 years, as I suspect, and you suspect as well, that in 2 years, if KU, Lance Leipold turns things around to where they're respectable, suddenly KU becomes that's a lot better than Rutgers football, for crying out loud. I mean, but if the Big Ten can deal with Rutgers, they can deal with KU football.
Yeah.
If KU's getting better and Rutgers is looking like they're getting better under Greg Schiano, so the conference getting a little bit stronger at the bottom for the Big Ten perhaps, then that might be a big-time wild card to where maybe in 2 years, KU's going to be more appealing to the Big Ten. And who knows, as Brian said in that cut, the tectonic plates are always moving underneath the surface. So right now, I think KU and maybe even Iowa State are flirting with the Big Ten. The Big Ten maybe is flirting with them, saying we're interested, but not right now. And eventually, there could be another shoe to drop. There was a report coming out yesterday, to change gears a quick moment, is that there is some talk that the Pac-12 doesn't get the TV deal that they think they might get, but they might not get, that there could be a few Pac-12 schools saying, you know what, let's go to the newly configured Big 12, and the Pac-12 could be in trouble, which is crazy because the Big 12 was thinking, we got to merge with the Pac-12, some people did, to survive. But you look at the Pac-12, people aren't going to the games. It's embarrassing. The Big 12 institutions are still alive, and then you add in BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and Central Florida, and I'd say two of those four fan bases are rabid, and the other two are, I think, upcoming and getting better. That's a lot better than having UCLA with nobody in the stands, even though they're ranked 13th. USC having nobody in the stands, that's supposed to be their two brand names. You know, Oregon would be the other name, and Oregon usually fills this place. That's about the one exception. So, I mean, it would be crazy. In 2 years, you could see KU leave for the Big 10, but the Big 12 pick up some Pac-12 schools, or maybe there will be a merger eventually between the two. It's always constantly changing, and so what we see today, we may say, well, Big Ten doesn't want KU. They don't need KU. And why would they want KU? 2 years from now, it could completely change, especially if KU football gets better.
Yeah, and that's I think it hinges all the way on that, right?
Yeah, I think so.
If Big Ten has any interest, they need to have something viable. Because the difference between Rutgers is not a good football program at this point in time, but the difference between Rutgers and Kansas also is that Rutgers is representing an entire state with a large population.
Yeah.
I mean, they are the State University of New Jersey. So that's one of the bigger differences when you kind of look at how bad Rutgers is.
Yeah,
they're bad, but they're representing all that population base in New Jersey.
Right.
Which is more than
TV market.
Even what Lawrence is going to provide. And I know you're close to Kansas City with some of that, but that doesn't factor all the way in, I don't think, for a lot of conferences. So just when you're comparing that, of having a bad football program and welcoming into your conference – There's so many things that go into it on that football side of things that are not just if your program's good, right?
Yeah.
Even if it's not good, you're still, you know, Nashville, Vanderbilt's still in the SEC. They haven't been a real good football program for a while. Mm-hmm. And just the things like that that go in, factor in. But, listen, I'm not saying it can't happen, and I'm not saying that Lance Leipold can't turn this around, and in a couple of years the Big Ten will come calling. I'm not saying that won't happen, right? Right now it doesn't appear that that would be a viable move for the Big Ten, like if they would actually want to do it.
What if it's kind of a done deal and they're just working out, you know, buyouts, things like that, to where they've got the structure, but it's not completely done, but it's in the works, and that might be what we're talking about here. Or maybe there's like a condition and the Big Ten saying, listen, we're interested, but on one condition, your football program's got to show some improvement.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, we're willing to look at that, look at this in a year or two. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just completely speculating. But
that's all I'm doing right now, too.
And we all are. Everybody is. Yep. But Brian Haney yesterday, and I love having him on the show. He's awesome. I mean, I'm so glad I asked the question, because I had no idea that I thought he would kind of like not say a lot about it. And right off the bat, he said, surprisingly, there's no reaction here. It doesn't move the needle in Lawrence. And just the very beginning of that comment makes you go, okay, KU's like, big deal. Mm-hmm. Whereas K-State fans are rejoicing about it. And that shows you the difference between the two institutions right now. KU's not going to settle for what this is, it sounds like. And K-State's like, this is the best thing we can do, so we're going to settle. Because the only option we really have. KU's basically saying, we do maybe have an option or two out there. We're going to pursue that, even though we are in tow with the other seven members in adding four schools to the Big 12. And John texted me, and I don't know if John missed the part where we already talked about that, or maybe he texted me before we actually said it. But that was, I replayed it a second time. Brian's head, and maybe it's just a slip of the tongue, but he said, I'm going to miss. He didn't say, I would miss. And he's very careful what he says. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm going to miss. It almost sounds like it's something that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's like maybe in his mind he's thinking, if this happens, I'm going to miss it.
Yeah.
But he didn't preface with if this happens.
No, he didn't.
During that,
right.
Maybe that was going through his mind.
And
we don't know.
And maybe we're reading way too much into that line, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, who knows how that all played out. But, yeah, it was. I mean, regardless of the I'm going to miss part, he said plenty about where Kansas sits on that and where they stand on it.
And he said, let's be honest, I mean, do you think the next TV deal with those four new schools instead of Texas, Oklahoma is going to get you where you were or better? And right away, him and I agreed, no.
No.
I mean, no, it's
no.
And if it does, here's the thing. And if it does somehow, let's say, for instance, the new TV deal the Big 12 gets with whoever, whatever networks. Let's say they get to $37 million a year, which would be insane. But let's say they do without Oklahoma, Texas. You know what that means? If they can get a $37 million deal, the Big 12, without Oklahoma, Texas, you know what that means? That means everybody else is getting a big hike up, too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still going to be this huge discrepancy.
Yeah.
So if the newly configured Big 12 is 20 and the SEC is, or the Big 10 right now is 55, okay? And right now it's 37, 55, and SEC's 44. But they say with Texas, Oklahoma, SEC will go up to $60 million per year or more. The Big 10's going to get $60 million a year or more with their new deal. We don't know about the Pac-12, but it's even lower than the current Big 12, actually, by about, it's $33 million, I think. The Big 12 is currently at 37. Well, that's fine. Let's say somehow, some way, adding BYU, Houston, Cincinnati, and Central Florida up the ante to where you can keep the same TV deal almost, which I think every member of the Big 12 that doesn't have a lot of options, including the new members, would love and jump at that. Kansas isn't going to jump at that because they'll look and go, okay, the Big Ten just went up from 55 to 68, and the SEC went from 44 to 65, and the Big 12 stayed at 37, which is great considering we lost Oklahoma, Texas, but we're still 20, 25 million behind everybody. Mm-hmm. That is not going to sit well at Kansas. It's just not.
Well, it's not going to sit well anywhere. If you have an option, you're going to take it.
Right. That's the whole key. Do you
Nobody
have an
wants this.
Listen,
right?
here's your options.
Option.
It's your options are
if they have an option.
Your options is take less than $20 million a year and go somewhere else that's lower, like the Mountain West or the AAC, or stick with the newly configured Big 12 you're putting together, and that might be $20 to $30 million, roughly, maybe more. Or you've got options and you can make a lot more than that. You basically have three options. It's either go down, go up, or if neither option, you don't want to go down, so that's usually not an option. And up, you love to have, but KU might be the only school that's left that got the up option. And everybody else is like, well, we got to settle for what we got. So, you know, you would go out to a nice dinner. Okay, I can only afford the cheaper thing on the menu. And I would like to get an appetizer, but I can't quite afford. I could go down to the appetizer. That would be less money I would spend on the menu. but I really won't be full. Now, I can get the regular meal, and I'll be okay and satisfied with that, but you know what I really want? I want the $40 steak. Those are my three options. I just barely got enough money to pay for a $10 appetizer. I don't know if that'll finish me, but I don't want to spend $25 on this or $20 on this. But what I really want is that $40 steak, but I'm going to settle for the $19.99 chicken fried steak, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I feel K-State is. They're stuck in the middle on this whole thing, as are most of the remaining Big 12 institutions. And the one institution, and maybe Iowa State's got an option here, Brian mentioned it in his comments, but KU seems to be the one that actually has the best chance of all eight to go to maybe the Big Ten or maybe ACC. Now, the question is, how much more of an option is it for them compared to everybody else in KU's eyes, other people's eyes, and the most important eyes are the Big Ten? And I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's fire there or not. After yesterday's comments with Brian, I think there is a little bit more there than I thought.
Well, I think it sounds like there's more than what we imagine right now. Anyway.
I think so. It's very interesting. And to publicly just come out and say it is pretty interesting, too. Mm-hmm. You know, Texas, Oklahoma, kind of, you know, obviously with their whole thing, SEC kept it super quiet the whole time. KU's like, we'll be transparent. Well, of course we got to watch out for our university. Yeah. And every university should watch out for the university first, and the conference should come second or even third.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? All right, so I'll get started on the Chiefs. So I'll let you go grab that over there real quick. Patrick Mahomes' birthday's a day. Patrick, what do you want, buddy? Oh, that's right. You got everything. Okay. Y'all, you want another Super Bowl ring? I can't do that for you. That's going to be on you and your teammates and coaching staff. I don't know what you get the guy that has everything. He's 26. He's on top of the world. He's a Super Bowl MVP. He's been MVP of the NFL. And last night, by the way, before we get to the Chiefs, the Giants and the Washington football team, I want to make sure I get this in chronological order. Crazy game last night, Thursday Night Football, and I'm sure Patrick Mahomes was watching.
Good snap, good hold, kick is no good. But a flag is down in the secondary near the Washington sideline.
Offside on the defense from the 97. It's a 5-yard penalty and a first down.
That was Dexter Lawrence, who came across early. And now a 43-yard try for the win. Good snap, good hold, kick is good. Washington wins it.
So the Washington football team thought they had lost. The Giants thought they had won, and then they're an offside penalty. So then the Washington football team kicks again, and then they win, and the Giants lose. Crazy, the emotions. Thursday night football, Monday night football, the Raiders thought they had won, reviewed the play, stood down at the half-yard line, then they threw a pick in the end zone, and then you thought the Raiders might lose, and then they turn around, and then they won on a walk-off touchdown pass. The emotions of sports. It's maddening, and it's so fun at the same time. A guy that's having a lot of fun is a guy that had his birthday today. It's Patrick Mahomes. He's turning 26. Patrick Mahomes will face the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday Night Football. You can listen to it on Z96.3 of Lake with pregame at 6 o'clock kickoff scheduled for 7:20. Here's the birthday boy on facing the speed of the Raven defense on Sunday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to have to fill it out throughout the game. Obviously, they're a very good defense. They do a lot of great things. They have a lot of great players. It seems like every single week they have a brand new scheme because the defense coordinator over there, Wink. And so for me, it's about just kind of going through my reads and trying to get the ball to my hand. If you hold on to the ball too long against defense like this, usually bad things happen. So I try to get out of my hand and let the playmakers make plays.
All right, that Raven defense struggled against the Raiders on Monday night. No Marcus Peters, former chief. He's out with a torn ACL. Sammy Watkins is a member of the Baltimore Ravens, and Sammy has come out and said that, Lamar and Patrick definitely view the Raven-Chiefs game as a rivalry, which they should. The only thing is, the Chiefs have owned this rivalry. Mahomes is 3-0 against Lamar Jackson, and the last one last year was a blowout in Baltimore. Chiefs rolled in that ball game. Lamar Jackson was asked about the previous losses.
It's not about, you know, me and Mahomes, not to me, you know, probably to everyone else, but, you know, it's the Ravens versus the Kansas City Chiefs. They did beat us, you know, three times or whatever, but that's in the past. We you know, we got a better opportunity this time to come around, and we take the advantage and win at our home stadium. But I'm not dwelling on those losses. You know, we come to Sunday night, and we're going to play.
Now, the Chiefs are supposed to have Tyrann Mathieu back, and, boy, that would be helpful, especially from a communication standpoint. He's a quarterback on the defense for the Kansas City Chiefs, and John Harbaugh talks about that Chiefs defense that was absolutely ripped apart in the first half against Cleveland in week one.
Well, they're very aggressive. You know, they can be aggressive because I think they understand what the way the team, the equation works for them as a team. So in that sense, they're going to be very aggressive. They're going to try to create the illusion of chaos. And you've got to organize that and get it organized in your mind offensively and be ready to attack that.
So we were talking about Lamar Jackson. He has really not come through when they play the Chiefs. Maybe eventually he will if he gets enough chances. Here's Mahomes on Lamar's evolution as a quarterback.
You can tell he has a better understanding of the offense. I mean, just like I have. When you first get out there, I mean, me and my first year, and him and his first year, you kind of have to rely on your just playmaking ability. But as you kind of continue to learn and evolve as a passer and as you learn different things in this league and you see different defenses, you understand little tricks of the trade that you can do to go out there and have success. And you can see that with him. And then obviously when it comes down to it, he can make plays happen pretty much every game.
There's always a lot of hype around Lamar Jackson against Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, they don't defend one another. Each guy is a quarterback for their respective offense. Here's Mahomes on all the hype around the Ravens and Lamar when they play the Chiefs.
When two good football teams play against each other, there's always going to be a lot of hype and a lot of build-up to the game. And then seeing Lamar and all the success that he's had with that team, you know they're two of the top teams in the AFC. And so we're going to have to battle every year, it seems like, or in the playoffs or whenever it is. And so obviously there's a lot of momentum coming throughout the week when you go play teams like this.
The Ravens, they can still run the ball. They got Latavius Murray, who was in a contract dispute with the Saints, and they just flat-out cut him, which is pretty crazy. And the Ravens picked him up. He's only been with the team for about a week. They lost their top three running backs to injuries, season-ending injuries, including Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, Justice Hill. But yet, they got Lamar, and he's part of that running game. Here's Andy Reid, the coach of the Chiefs, on the Ravens' run game and the threat of Lamar.
They know how to run the football. And you saw that even with the injuries that have taken place. I mean, they ran the ball well, so... I think their offense coordinator's got, who I have a tremendous respect for. He's got a great feel for the run game. Lamar obviously is a huge threat. I mean, he can throw it and he can run it, and he's smart. So I mean, all those things go in, and he likes to play the game. So you know, you got to prepare yourself the right way there.
Okay, so that's the thoughts on the run game and Lamar Jackson. But what about the Ravens overall, Andy?
They're well coached and they've got good players. So it's always, you know, a knockdown, drag out fight there, and they're tough. I mean, that's the way they practice. That's the way they go about their business, and so we've got to make sure we prepare ourselves right for it. It's every play is an honest down when you play them.
John Harbaugh used to be a special teams coach under Andy Reid in Philadelphia, so he's part of the Andy Reid coaching tree. And another subplot to this game, Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins is now a member of the Baltimore Ravens, and Mahomes on Sammy being on the other side this time around.
When he's healthy, man, he can roll. I mean, he's a guy that he comes to work every single day. He puts in the work. He's obviously a bigger body. He can make a lot of catches, but he has the speed to break it away at any time. I think you saw that in their game on Monday night, and obviously when he was here with us. And so I'm happy for him that he's in a good spot, and I know it'll be a great challenge for our defense to have to battle against him.
Okay, so the other subplot, Orlando Brown used to be tackle for the Ravens last year. And Orlando Brown was asked earlier this week about, all right, are they asking you for information about the Ravens and what they like to do? Because now you're on the other side, okay? The Chiefs used to be the enemy, now the Ravens are the enemy. And Orlando Brown said, oh, Spags has been hitting me up for all kinds of information because I'm not a snitch. Okay, so Orlando Brown is not really going to give too much information about the Ravens do, even though he's a member of the Chiefs. So what about Sammy Watkins? How does Sammy Watkins approach the, okay, Raven coaches are asking, what? Give us some inside scoop. Tell us about the plays you run in Kansas City. Give us some inside information, Sammy. So, Sammy, are you a snitch or not?
I'm trying to win at the end of the day. So snitch, no snitch, anything I can give Wink in the defense, that's what I'm going to do. And not particularly giving up plays, but, hey, man, do this on this guy and do this on that guy, and that's just the way of football. Guys go on different teams every week, every day. You know, you pull a guy off practice squad to try to pick their brain. So, I mean, I'm going to try to do anything to win.
So it sounds like it might be a snitch. But which you know, why wouldn't you be? I mean, who's your employer? Who are you going to take care of? Now, like, if I think about it in real-life terms, let's say, I always use this as an example, maybe it's unfair. If you go from one bank to another and they're competing banks, are you going to give a little bit of inside information to help your new employer, or are you going to be a little bit hesitant initially? I think initially, if you're a morally right person, you're going to hesitate for a while. okay? But if you feel, or if you feel like you've been wronged by that previous place you were at, it could be from one fast food restaurant to another. It could be, I mean, who knows, two similar businesses. You might be willing to spill all the beans about it. You could be sore that, hey, the Chiefs didn't re-sign me, so Sammy's really sore, so he's going to give the Ravens everything. Orlando Brown's like, hey, man, they traded me. I wanted to play left tackle. They were nice enough to trade me to, hello, maybe the best team in all of football, the Chiefs. So I think Sammy's got more sore feelings towards the Chiefs than Orlando does towards the Ravens, and that's what it sounds like when listening about these guys this week. And I don't know if it really makes a big difference or not, but guys get picked up from practice squads for 1 week only. Because they're preparing for a team they're going to play. So that school teams, coaches are always looking for an advantage, any advantage they can get in any which way. And this is just another example of it.
I don't think the guys are just going to like take the big playbook and throw it on their coach's desk and say, here it is.
Here
man.
It is, baby.
This is all you need. Don't even have to ask me anything. I feel like Orlando Brown's probably telling his guys more than what he would say. Like, why, I'm not a snitch. He's just looking to put that out there publicly and privately, probably telling them whatever they really need to know about the game and the Ravens, what they're doing offensively. Listen, they've played them enough to not have to have an overabundance probably of information. They know what the Ravens have and who they are. They've played them every year here recently, so it's not like there's a whole lot of secrets between Harbaugh and Reed. And plus, when you go into a new season, there's going to be different wrinkles anyway that this guy wasn't a part of. Like, he doesn't know some of the changes that might have happened.
Right.
Based on the fact that he is now with the Chiefs, based on the fact that Sammy Watkins is now with the Ravens and can tell him about the Chiefs, they're gonna add some different things in there that none of those guys know about to help protect themselves as well. So, you know, I feel like you do want to get those kind of guys, and if you have them, then, tell me about this or this. What do you do here that made you so successful this way, and how can we combat that, you know? I mean, that's what you're going to do all the time. You're going to ask those questions, but the teams are going to put different stuff in to try to combat that.
The Chiefs have a completely new offensive line, so this new line might be better at handling things from week in, week out in regards to adjustments. And, there are different faces on each team, and there's even coaching changes sometimes at different positions from year to year. It's going to be fun Sunday night. I think the Chiefs are going to be fine. I just don't see how the Ravens are going to unless Lamar Jackson finally comes out of his cocoon and ends up being a great passing quarterback, I don't think the Chiefs are going to let him beat him with his legs. He usually doesn't. You get Tyrann Mathieu back. He's excited about being back. He missed last week's game. He had come out of COVID protocols. Matthew Derrick at Chiefs Digest was with us earlier this week, and he said that Mathieu could have played. Andy Reid said no. Andy Reid's decision at game time. He said, I don't think it's fair to Tyrann because he missed so much time. Well, Tyrann Mathieu's ready. That's going to be I think that makes a big difference for this defense, no question.
For sure.
And the other thing is that Frank Clark's supposed to be back, which I don't think that's as big a deal because I don't think Frank Clark's even close to the player he once was. But he is a threat off the edge. And in regards to injury report, Colin Saunders, a glute, full participant yesterday in practice. Austin Blythe, abdomen, backup lineman, full participant. Mike Dana, full participant of the groin injury. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, ankle, full participant. Tyreek Hill, a toe, full participant, and Derek Nnadi, a hip issue. He was a full participant, and Frank Clark with a hamstring, full participant all week long, and Tyrann Mathieu's been there all week long. So when it comes to the injury front, the Chiefs are much healthier than the Ravens. Marquise Brown, they're already down a couple of receivers. Marquise Brown has not practiced all week long. Downtown Brown, Hollywood Brown from Oklahoma, so he might not play. Ronnie Stanley, tackle, has not practiced all week due to an ankle. He might not play. Derek Wolfe, a good defensive end for them, he has not practiced all week. He might not play. Marlon Humphrey, their best corner without Peters out there, which Humphrey's still probably the better corner, but Peters is outstanding cover corner, but Peters is out with a torn ACL. Humphrey's had a back issue. He's been a limited participant, so there's an issue. They're on their fourth-string running back, in essence. The guy's just learning the system in Latarius Murray, but although he is still a talented running back. And what are they going to get in the passing game? Is it going to just be Mark Andrews and tight end, or can they get the ball to Sammy Watkins? Will Watkins burn the Chiefs for a touchdown or some big plays, and is Sammy Watkins going to be the difference in this game? I have a hard time believing Sammy Watkins is going to be a difference in the game. He'll probably, get hurt midway through the first quarter. Now, I hope he doesn't. I hope he can play the whole game. I hope Sammy Watkins has a full season and has a great season and then gets paid in the offseason. I have nothing against Sammy Watkins because that's the only thing that's held him back. His injuries. I mean, the guy's just hurt all the time. And so you almost expect him to get hurt if everybody else in the Ravens is getting hurt. I just don't – I think the only way I see the Chiefs losing this game on Sunday night is if they just flat out think they're going to come in and beat a wounded Ravens team with all their injuries. The Chiefs take them lightly. That's the only way I see the Chiefs losing this game, if they take them lightly. Like, the Ravens are going to be fired up, and they're going to give them the best chance, best challenge that they can. But I think it is a mental thing. I think the Ravens mentally are beat before this game begins Sunday night. They're without key players. Their top corner, one of their top corners, top three running backs, or a receiver or two, maybe other guys as well. Chiefs coming into town, escaping, barely winning week one. I think the Chiefs know they got a lot of room for improvement. Their defense should be better with Matthew and Clark back. And I saw what the Ravens defense did against Derek Carr, who's not exactly the most mobile quarterback in the world. He's okay, but Mahomes can do so much more. And the Chiefs, the one thing about the Chiefs, you know, people have told me, that aren't Chiefs fans. Well, man, the Chiefs just keeps escaping. You know, they how many games is that in a row that they've not covered the spread? Or how many games in a row have they not blown anybody out? And I said, you know what? That's the sign of a great team, is they have poise, composure, no matter what the score is, if they're ahead or behind, and they find a way to win those games. That's what makes them so great, that when it comes down to the biggest moments, they're able to make plays. And I think what you see with the Chiefs is, it's a lot of pressure put on the opposing team that's playing you, because even when you get a big lead, you can never let up. You can never relax. And it's human nature to do that. But the Chiefs have the huge mental edge. But the other thing that the Chiefs do so well, and this is why the Chiefs don't get blown out hardly ever. Even if their defense isn't very good, this is why the Chiefs are always in games. Obviously, number 15, Mahomes. We get that. That's duh. But you know what the other thing is? The Chiefs don't turn the ball over. I mean, to me, in order for the Ravens to beat the Chiefs on Sunday night, the Chiefs defense has to be god-awful, and the Chiefs have to make a couple of turnovers on offense. Mahomes doesn't throw very many interceptions. When he throws an interception, it's negated because he knows he has a free play and throws it anyway, because he gets him to jump off sides with his cadence. So he rarely throws interceptions. He's never thrown an interception in 11 September games. And guess what? Sunday, September 19th.
Yeah,
so you can't count on interception Raven defense on Sunday. I mean, eventually he'll throw one in September, but he hasn't so far. So you can't count on getting picks. And if you can't get pressure, if you bring blitzes, he's going to burn you. If you sit back, he's learning how to take the underneath stuff. And the Ravens, this is the way you beat the Chiefs, and it's what the Buccaneers did, and the Chiefs were shorthanded on the offensive line. You've got to get pressure on Mahomes. He's not Superman. He's a great player. But if you can get constant pressure on Patrick Mahomes and make him scramble, which sometimes he can kill you scrambling, but you just put a ton of pressure on Mahomes with your front four, and you can drop seven in coverage. You can mix up your coverages. You don't have to blitz anybody. You don't have to send an extra guy. If you can get pressure with the front four, then that really neutralizes the Chiefs' offense, although the Chiefs can still find a way to win games even that way. They have. But the Chiefs don't make many mistakes in regards to turnovers. They don't fumble it hardly ever either. The guy that fumbles, that's a guy who should never be on the field, and that's DeMarcus Robinson, okay? Clyde Edwards-Helaire very rarely fumbles it. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce rarely ever fumble it. Now that I said that, every one of them will fumble on Sunday night.
Kelce had some issues early in his career but he's really kind of taking care of that.
Mahomes rarely fumbles the ball. Every once in a while he will and gets pressure like any quarterback. So to me, for the Ravens to beat the Chiefs Sunday night, they've got to get a couple turnovers. They got to force a couple turnovers, and they're going to have to run the ball extremely well. And if the Ravens get down by two scores, the game's over, because they can't come back with Lamar just dropping back to pass. And everybody knows that, because Lamar's never really ever done that in his career.
How many times have you seen that happen with the Ravens, right? In important situations, obviously the playoff game.
Last year against the Bills, the year before against the Titans.
Against the Titans, for sure, is the one that always stands out to me, because Lamar was missing his guys so bad deep.
And he lost his poise. He was throwing his helmet.
Yeah. And it was, there's a formula to get inside his head. There's no question about it. Yeah. There's a formula to beat the Ravens. It's get a big lead early.
Yeah.
And if you do that, there's going to be some issues for the Ravens trying to come back. There's a formula for the Ravens to win, get a big lead early, and then they blew it last week against the Raiders, right? And so the Ravens have to get out to good starts for them to have success and to be able to use that to their advantage, the running game, if they can.
I know it can happen, but for what I saw from the Ravens on Monday night, I don't think they have enough weapons to get it done.
Yeah.
All right, Chiefs a 3.5-point favorite, so they don't cover the spread. They win by 3, apparently. But I think they're going to cover the spread this time. They're going to win and finally cover the spread. All right, Sunday night, 6 o'clock on Z96.3, The Lake. Other NFL games, Patriots at the Jets, both teams 0-1. Broncos at the Jaguars. Broncos trying to start 2-0. And boy, how about the schedule of the Broncos early in the year? They could get off to a nice start. Bills at the Dolphins. Bills will try to bounce back. Dolphins are 1-0. 49ers at the Eagles, both teams 1-0. Rams are at the Colts. Other noon games, Raiders at the Steelers. The Bengals are at the Bears. The Texans are at the Browns. And the Saints are at the Panthers. And then the 305 games, or the 325 games, Vikings at Cardinals, Falcons are at the Buccaneers. Matt Ryan has never beaten Tom Brady as quarterback ever. He's 0-5 against Brady. Titans are at the Seahawks. Titans could be looking at 0-2 start. They're supposed to be one of the top teams AFC, right? They got Julio Jones. That's just going to send him over the top. Another guy gets hurt a lot. Cowboys are at the Chargers. Mark it down. Cowboys will lose, and they'll have an excuse this time because they're missing a couple of big-time defensive players and missing a receiver. And I'm really cheering for the Cowboys, which means for sure they're going to lose because I like the Chargers to not start 2-0. Chiefs at the Ravens Sunday night, as we know. And then Monday night, Lions at the Packers. Wouldn't that be something? Aaron Rodgers lays another egg and the Packers go 0-2 to start the year? I doubt it. It's at Lambeau. And Rodgers, you know, Nick Leckie was on with us earlier this week, former NFL player, and he said week one is a crapshoot. He said week one is the worst week because he said, and he even pointed to the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, and they struggled week one. He said week one is a crapshoot because they got a lot of different people in different places, as we talked about earlier. Sometimes different changes in coaching staffs. And then remember, Rodgers and some of the first stringers didn't play at all the whole preseason, which I think that was maybe a mistake, perhaps. And you don't have a lot of film, obviously, because it's week one. Once you get to week three, Nick Leckie says, then it's kind of like games on. Week two, better, because you at least have 1 week of film. So I think the Packers will bounce back, and I would hope. If not, then it might be time to trade Aaron Rodgers. You're 0-2. Of course, in that division, 8-8 might win. I mean, the Bears are nothing special. The Vikings are nothing special. The Lions are trying to rebuild. Packers could have a not-so-good year and win the division at 10-6, to be honest. Note here from John Betts. Lincoln has changed their game. They're going to play at Clifton Clyde. So,
yeah,
Lincoln's at Clifton.
I had that, and I retweeted it too from actually Lincoln. It's safety concerns. There's COVID-19 at Palco is where the concerns are at. So, Lincoln at Clifton Clyde tonight instead of Logan Palco.
That's a nice change. Lincoln's got Clifton Clyde, man. Clifton Clyde's a very good football team.
Yeah,
always.
There's definite change in the talent level of the team they're going to face tonight.
And not having much prep time for it.
Yeah.
That's going to not be ideal, but I give credit to Lincoln for not dodging it and saying,
Clifton Clyde needs somebody to play, we'll go play him.
Who is Clifton Clyde going to play?
Oh, that was early in the week. Now I don't remember.
Yeah. I saw.
I can find it.
I saw Steinbrock put out there yesterday about looking for an opponent, and then they got Lincoln. So I'm glad they were able to get that.
Yeah, he had put it out early in the week because they had already lost him already, whoever they were supposed to play.
While you look that up, I'll go through our schedule for today. So here we go, in case you missed it. 5:40, Football Express, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable. And then 6:30, pregame. And then 7 o'clock, Osmer at Lakeside on Z96.3 Lake and KatieCountry94.com. Bullet at Concordia, KatieCountry94, KatieCountry94.com. Live video stream at NCKSSports.com via the Blake Trenton channel. 10:05 is a local scoreboard show brought to you by State Farm Insurance. Marty Walters in Osborne and Kevin Hewitt in Beloit. We'll talk to some of the coaches after the game and give you all the scores from the area as well. A reminder, tomorrow, Beloit Volleyball, they'll be playing, I'll try to remember off the top of my head, I believe it's 10, noon, and 1 approximately. They're going to play Thayer Central. They're going to play Republic County and Hanover and pool play at the Republic County Invitational tomorrow. And then hopefully they'll have more, well, they will have more matches later in the day, but hopefully in the winner side of the bracket and everything. All of Beloit's volleyball matches tomorrow will be live streamed at ncksports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. So that's our schedule for tonight. And then also for tomorrow, next Tuesday, Danny Welniak will be with us from KCTV5 in Kansas City, talk Chiefs football. We'll have a guest to talk K-State next Wednesday. Next Thursday, Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks. Maybe by then, Kay, you'll be a member of the Big Ten. Who knows? All right.
They're supposed to play Wakefield.
Wakefield.
Yeah.
That's who
I was actually, I wanted to know because I wanted to know if it was going to affect anything moving forward.
Right.
So.
So Lincoln travels to Clifton Clyde.
Lincoln at Clifton Clyde tonight.
That'll be a shorter bus trip, I would think, right? Going to Clifton Clyde or not?
Palco to Lincoln, Clyde to Lincoln. It's going to be fairly close.
I think it'll be a little shorter.
Yeah, I think it should be a little bit shorter.
Knowledge of the
though.
Map.
Yeah.
Maybe not a major difference.
Yeah.
So there you have it. The whole schedule posted at ncksports.com. Did I say that today during the show at all?
state, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.
Katy, Country 94 weather.